Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is Tuesday, March 3rd, 2020, as we creep ever closer to WrestleMania 36, which is, my lord, about, what, 4 weeks away, right? In Tampa, Florida, we are creeping closer and closer, and the WrestleMania card is taking shape, and we have a Monday Night Raw to discuss, and a very eventful one that was mixed in my reactions, and I think I actually have a more positive outlook on the show than most did, at least from the podcasts that I've listened to, and some of the major podcasts, which I won't give any free advertisements to, but we all know who they are, and I tend to lean on the side of a little more positivity, and that's not to say that we didn't have some things on the show that were just like, you know, what the hell's going on? I mean, we have that on a weekly basis, and this week tended to be a little bit more than it has been over the last couple of months, to say the least. And so we got some good stuff to talk about, and we're going to get to that. And of course, the RKO and Beth Phoenix. I have some strong opinions on that I've tweeted out, and many of you may. You're either going to agree with me or completely disagree. I don't think you're going to find a middle ground on what I'm going to say about that. So stay tuned for that in just a minute. And before we do that, though, I have to carve out some time to say thank you for taking the time out of your day or night to listen to this show. I know that I have listeners worldwide, and I appreciate everybody that that presses that play button. And it's much appreciated as this show continues to grow. And I'd like to, while we're growing, on the topic of growing, welcome our newest member to the WWE Podcast family, and that's Jeff Johnson. So he'll be covering the AEW end of things, and I just posted his very first podcast that covered AEW Revolution over this past weekend, and definitely going to want to listen to it. Very easy to listen to, knowledgeable, great audio quality, really checks all the boxes that you're looking for in a podcast host. So check that out. He's going to be exclusive here to the WWE Podcast. Name, again, is Jeff Johnson, and he'll be covering our AEW news and every single week when Dynamite airs, and of course, the pay-per-views that roll around for AEW as well. So you can check him out also on Twitter at Run With Turtles. So check him out on my feed. I posted his latest show, his first show, and also tagged him in a post. So give him a follow and let me know what you guys think. And, you know, I really do want to thank you guys for joining me as we have various outlets that you can check us out on. And that's including Apple, Google, Spotify, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, among many, many others. And I know you guys don't all have iPhones, and that's fine because you can find us anywhere. And Apple Podcasts is the number one place in terms of giving us a rating and review. But if you have any podcast app that does allow for rating and reviews, I would really appreciate if you just took a moment and gave us 5 stars. Literally takes like 10 seconds and it is the best way to help out the show. So thank you in advance for that. But let's get to why you're here. Let's get to Monday Night Raw that aired from, where the heck were they? I don't know. WWE hit it pretty well on Monday. I can't remember. It started with a B. I don't know. It'll come to me. Of course, I'm being very facetious. And WWE really just drove home that they were in Brooklyn, as expected. Anytime they're in a big market, there's about an over-under of 15 to 20 of how often they'll say the name of the city to let everyone know of just how great they are being in a big market, being in a big city. So we certainly got that treatment on Monday night. And let's talk about the number one thing coming out of that show. Out of last night. And no, I don't think it's the Street Profits title, tag team title win. And we'll get to that too. It's not Brock Lesnar getting kicked in the head 3 times. We'll get to that. I believe it is our Beth Phoenix getting RKO'd, as I had expected. And I think many others had a hunch that Beth Phoenix would be laying flat on her face in this segment. I didn't know it was going to main event Raw. If it was, you know, I had a hint or a feeling that if it main evented Raw, that maybe Edge would make his return in Brooklyn in a big market at the end of Raw, and instead they went with just the RKO, and I'm totally fine with that. I think that was deserving of closing the show. It was impactful. It's not often that you see men put their hands on women, and Randy Orton, while he has a history of doing this, and most recently, Nia Jax from the Royal Rumble a year ago. You just don't see it that often. And it was, I think, a great move by WWE. And having Beth Phoenix, Edge's wife, get laid out by Randy Orton is an excellent way to continue to build the heat. Nobody has gotten any kind of retribution or payback on Randy since he laid out Edge, 6 weeks ago? I know WWE said 2 months ago in their little flashback video. It's been like 6 weeks, not 2 months, but I guess we're splitting hairs. But it certainly has been a long time since anybody has gotten their hands on Randy in any kind of meaningful capacity. And I absolutely loved Randy Orton's promo. It was Randy Orton at his absolute best. I think that might have been his best promo he's cut in a decade. Certainly up there in his top 10, for sure. It was genuine. It was very backhanded. Kind of blaming Beth Phoenix for Randy Orton's actions, not taking responsibility for his own actions, and pointing to somebody else who forced his hand, at least in his eyes, was a brilliant way to just continue to build heat. And still saying he loves him like a brother, and he did it because he had to, so he didn't end up in a wheelchair, was able to play with his kids. All of that was very well done. Beth in tears and frustrations, calling him an SOB. The only little critique that I could make about the promo itself was when Randy said that, you know, he did what he did so that Edge could live his life. Well, if you're going to do that, do you have to go after his neck? Is that a way to provide a out for Edge to continue to be a family man? I mean, then you're putting his livelihood at risk for a surgically repaired neck.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So maybe that's the thought, but I don't think that's what they were going for. I don't believe they were going for that, and maybe it was overlooked, or maybe it wasn't, or maybe it was looked at and said, who cares? But to me, I looked at that and said, well, if that's what you're going to do, why wouldn't you have taken out his leg, right? There are other extremities that you could have attacked to end his career early, his comeback early, so he doesn't end up in a wheelchair, versus doing the one thing that would actually put him back in an incapacitated state and actually affect his life at home. So it was kind of weird. Other than that, it was a damn brilliant promo. The RKO, we all saw it coming. People were chanting for it. I was hoping to see it, and we got it. Now, with all that praise being said, and I still love this angle, it's still the best thing on Monday Night Raw. The one thing I have beyond the little loophole of Randy attacking Edge's neck and then saying he was doing it to protect his life was that Randy Orton was provoked into delivering an RKO. Now, you could say to me, well, he still RKO'd Beth. You know, nobody should mention put their hands on women. Well, I'm going to fundamentally disagree with you on so many levels that if a woman is beating on a man, right? Does the man just stand there and whatever the woman wants to do, she can do simply because she's a woman? And you may say, well, men are stronger, they shouldn't hit women. Well, maybe women shouldn't hit men if they know men are stronger. Just a thought. I'm not advocating for domestic violence. I am not advocating that men should beat up on women because they're stronger. My point is that if women know that men have a physical advantage, maybe, just maybe, women should not attack men physically. And just because they're women in this WWE environment does not give them immunity from retaliation against men if they just want to beat on men, all right? There's no God-given right or right written into law that allows women to just beat on men and men just have to stand there and take it. It's self-defense, whether it's men on women, women on men, right? So my point, though, is that if Randy really wanted true heat, And he still got heat for doing it. And the announcers certainly, you know, even Byron Saxton called him an SOB for what he did. Well, you could say, but Beth Phoenix is the one that slapped him and then kicked him in the gut. Randy, you could argue, was doing it in self-defense. I think he was. I mean, I that's the point. While it's a great moment and it's going to be used nicely when Edge returns about talking, you know, about how Randy said that he loves his kids more than Beth does and blaming it on Beth and for what he did to Beth. I mean, this is going to be one of the most fiery promos we've ever seen from Edge whenever he returns. And I hope he does soon because we need some promo time from him. I think it's time to maybe bring him back in the next week or two. But Randy was really doing this out of self-defense. If he had gone and done the concerto to Beth, you could argue, well, that's not self-defense. That's overboard. But my point is, I think it would have been more effective if the RKO was done with no provocation, just saying how Beth is a bad mother and I love your kids more than you do. And I did this for your husband, and then makes her cry and then delivers an RKO. I mean, that to me would have been five times more effective. I really believe that. I really think it would have been more effective had he not been physically provoked and having Beth. What was he supposed to do? What did you expect Randy to do, or anyone for that matter? Just stand there? That's why I can't stand when female managers or any female in WWE that thinks that well, at least in story, of course, story, that if a woman slaps a man or kicks him between the legs, that they're just supposed to kind of stand there and take it, like Rey Mysterio did with Zelina Vega. For how many times did he just get laid out or screwed over by Zelina, and he doesn't retaliate? I mean, it's just nonsense. So I kind of sided with Randy here. Self-defense, my friend. I mean, it's self-defense. She shouldn't have attacked him. And what did she expect? Seriously, what did she expect to happen? Again, guys, I'm talking about wrestling storylines. What the hell did Beth Phoenix expect Randy Orton to do to her if she attacked him? We know Randy's past. Many of you thought that he was going to give the good old punt to Beth Phoenix. That's a dangerous move, though. Well, I mean, look, I'm all for it. I thought it would have been hilarious. Number one, it probably would have been overboard for PG, TV PG. Number two, I think it is a dangerous move to perform. As skilled as Randy Orton is, the punt has to be delivered with such precision, and that there is a very small window of and margin for error in that move. If Randy moves the wrong way by like half an inch, or the person he's kicking moves just the wrong way or tilts their head wrong, it could concuss them. I mean, the way that it's done. So I'm okay. I'm fine with that. But without repeating myself, I'll say one last time, the RKO would have been much more effective in heat building, more importantly, if Randy had delivered the RKO unprovoked. Because to me, it's self-defense and it's tit for tat, and that's what you get.
Stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Strip Club. Its mere name evokes lust and excitement on a scale that is unimaginable. The thought of dating and bedding the array of beauties that occupy these establishments is beyond exhilarating. The competition is fierce, however, with hundreds or thousands of patrons competing for their affections on a daily or weekly basis. So, what is the best way of scoring with one of these hotties? Well, check out the Gentleman's Club book. It's on Amazon. It's called Gentleman's Clubs: How Following 5 Specific Rules Will Bring Success in Dating an Exotic Dancer. It's by Ty McLemore. This book is like none other that it requires no fancy pickup lines, large amounts of money, or complicated formulas to yield results. Rather, it relies on solid psychology that is based on human behavior. No matter your race, your look, your occupation, or your socioeconomic level, this book will allow you to ultimately land that alluring woman that you desire. Check out The Gentleman's Clubs. It's on Amazon. And again, the author is Ty McLemore.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
All right, guys. So let's move on to the next piece of Raw in here. And let me talk about something I really liked. Drew McIntyre and Brock Lesnar. And the Paul Heyman segment, who comes out and does his weekly spiel about who he is, what he's doing there, and talking about how Drew McIntyre is basically a fraud and really getting heat here on himself, doing a great job as always. Eventually, this brings out Drew McIntyre, and he's in his wrestling gear, not in, you know, street clothes. Comes out, and Lesnar and him have a bit of a stare off, and Lesnar looks like he's going to turn around and attack. He runs right into a Claymore, lays out Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar stunned, Paul Heyman stunned, then makes his way back up the ramp after recovering, turns around and gets another Claymore, and then another Claymore on the ramp, ultimately getting a total of 3 Claymore kicks to the face by Drew McIntyre. It was quite a spectacle. The crowd was eating it up in Brooklyn. Absolutely eating it up, and I thought it was well done. I think it's a nice mix of talking and action from Drew over the last month since winning the Rumble. It's been a nice ride. We don't get Drew overexposed. He leaves me feeling like I want more of him. That can't be said for everyone on the roster. And WWE has done a great job, I think, with Drew McIntyre, making him human, personable, bringing him into the homes of viewers and making him relatable. They've done a great job, and it's felt organic and very few missteps. I'd give them a B+ to A- so far with managing Drew McIntyre since his win. Yes, you could say that, oh, he doesn't really do much. You know, he's doing like either, you know, 10-minute sit-down interviews, or he's out there with very quick hitting moves, and that's what he did this week. But again, think about this, folks. How much did you feel overexposed last year from Seth Rollins and droning on about the Wii stuff? And I'm going to defeat Brock Lesnar, and what, you know, I'm going to climb that mountain. I'm going to cap, you know, bring the championship back home, and I'm going to defend it. And it's actually going to be on TV every week. All the whole Wii stuff. Seth felt very saturated last year. I never felt like Seth was a great babyface anyway. And you can go back and listen to me if you think I'm just, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking on that. But Drew feels just, again, he leaves you wanting more. He's not killing your TV with his face plastered all over it. They're being very careful with Drew, giving you just enough. And this past week, last night, laying him out 3 times, laying Brock Lesnar out 3 times was, I didn't expect it. I thought it was well done. It's nice to see Brock on his back once in a while. And again, the crowd really ate this up. And that tells you something, especially a Brooklyn crowd, right? Brooklyn, Boston, they've been in some heavy markets, some big markets, some tough markets over the last few weeks. Over the last week, since they were in SmackDown on Friday in Boston and then went to Brooklyn for Raw. But these crowds are typically very difficult to please because they've seen it all, they've done it all. And when you have a crowd react to Drew McIntyre like they did, WWE, it means they've positioned him correctly. And if they just continue giving us bits and pieces of Drew, maybe next week, you know, it's another it's another sit-down interview, or maybe he's live on Raw and he comes out and talks about what he did last week. Maybe he opens Raw next week. I don't know. But just kind of like sprinkling him in the show is really doing wonders for his character. So props to everyone involved in that, and Brock Lesnar, who sells the hell out of stuff. Great, great, great job. And yeah, we all know, I believe we know the outcome at WrestleMania, but that's okay. Hey, Vince, listen. Just because we see something coming doesn't mean that it's not what we want. I know you hear incessantly, oh, that's predictable. Oh, well, he's just going to win. Oh, well. But here's the thing, and I will say this until I'm blue in the face. If it's the right thing, predictability doesn't overmatch and outweigh the right decision. It will be washed out by the right decision, if it's the right decision. So I don't need Vince surprising us with a Brock Lesnar win. And yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if Brock retained. I really wouldn't be shocked. It's going to be interesting to see how this story plays out over the next few weeks as we wrap up the WrestleMania build. I mean, we have like four Raws until it happens, and that's fine. It's more than enough. And they'll probably have maybe next week it'll be Drew in the building, Brock not there, or Brock in the building, Drew not there. And then eventually they come face to face on the final Raw before WrestleMania. That's the tried and true formula for main events. at WrestleMania. So that could very well be the case. That could very well be the case. Okay, moving on to the next big item, which is number three here, at least on my list. Are the Street Profits winning the Raw Tag Team Championships from Seth Rollins and Murphy? And as great as this match was, and listen, Montez Ford is clearly the star of that group, just as if Otis is the star of the heavy machinery on SmackDown. There's always a bigger star on a team, right? There's always that star, even in the Road Warriors. Animal, I believe, was a bigger star than Hawk. It's just the nature of the business. There's always a bigger star. Maybe you could argue that the Usos with Jimmy and Jay are on even footing, but they are twins, identical twins, so it's hard to differentiate at times of who they are. I get them mixed up still, and they've been in WWE for, what, like 10 years? But in general, the general rule is that in tag teams, there is usually a bigger star. And as I said, Otis is that bigger star in Heavy Machinery on SmackDown. And Montez Ford is clearly the bigger star in the Street Profits on Raw.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
And just a side note, did WWE go to the dollar store and just purchase, like, you know, 2,000 solo cups or the knockoff solo cup version, right? I don't know. And furthermore, I'm not understanding Montez Ford's obsession with the red cup, the red solo cup. Is it supposed to appeal to the younger generation who like beer pong or flip cup? I'm guessing that's what it is. He's just out to party, and that it's a referendum and a symbolic prop for partying, right? Is he appealing to fraternities and sororities? I don't understand the cup, and maybe because I didn't follow them very closely in NXT, what is the purpose of the red cup? Again, I'm assuming it's just a symbolic figure for partying in college. Maybe he should just bring out an empty can of Keystone Light while he's at it, if that's the case. I mean, I don't know. I don't have anything against it. I'm just not understanding it. And furthermore, with the number of people in the audience, at least on the hard camera side, that had red solo cups tells me that indeed WWE probably handed those out. But if anybody knows, out of curiosity, just tweet me if you were in attendance or know why there were so many red cups on the hard camera side. Just curious, because it was a cool visual, but for them to have it in the tag team title win was a little bit coincidental. So, again, nothing against it. But anyway, Montez Ford, obviously and clearly going to be the breakout star of that group, and that's fine. He is very talented. He's good on the mic. He's charismatic. He's a little bit wacky in times, a little bit quirky. But again, they always have the replay of how much height he gets from the top rope. And it's seriously amazing. This guy is a true athlete. He's got a very bright future in WWE. I'm looking forward to what he does after this, the Street Profits ride is over, whenever that may be. And I'm not advocating for it for quite some time, but, I think Montez Ford will grow as a performer in this group, add nuances to his character, continue to get better in the ring. I just ultimately think Montez Ford is going to be a big deal in WWE if he doesn't get in trouble, stays out of the wellness policy violations, and continues to try to grow himself. So I'm looking forward to it. But anyway, we get this match here with Rollins and Murphy, and they weren't on the same page either. And I thought they were going to go down that road of, oh, there could be deception. There could be tension in the group after Murphy accidentally hit Seth in the face with a kick. They mentioned it, but they didn't play off of it. In other words, that wasn't really part of the narrative of the story. And we'll see next week if Seth Rollins ends up, you know, publicly shaming Murphy or giving him, tell him to take a walk of atonement, whatever it may be. I don't know. Maybe they'll just downplay it and pretend it never happened. But we did get a Seth Rollins and Murphy miscommunication. But with them facing the Street Profits at Elimination Chamber, I don't think I'm, giving away state secrets when I say there is a exactly 0% chance of Seth Rollins and Murphy regaining those belts. So I can safely say that next week on Raw, if there's not another miscommunication at Elimination Chamber, where they go. Because I think that group needs gold. But with the Street Profits winning, a good match. It was entertaining. One of the highlights of Raw. I really, really enjoyed it. And again, Montez Ford was the star. The one thing I will say, because you got to balance this thing out, what in the hell propagated them to get another tag team title match, right? How did that happen? These things just pop out of nowhere sometimes. And furthermore, why was it billed as their last chance, right? They billed it as a now or never. How did that come about? Who signed that? How did this happen? Some of these things, it doesn't make any sense. Where do they come from? Is it just to make things bigger and more dramatic without actually explaining how they happen? I think the answer is yes. And I think that creative and Vince say, the fans, they're not going to dig into it and they'll forget after the Street Profits win. No, people that listen to wrestling podcasts, I believe, or create them, like yours truly, look at these details. Because I don't think it's too much to ask WWE sometimes for just a little bit of logic, right? For just a little bit of understanding sometimes, a little bit of explanation. Do I think the Street Profits winning was the right move? Yes, I do. I do. Because that frees up Seth Rollins to do a singles match at WrestleMania. And we all know who that's going to be against. So before I move on to that piece of it, just want to close out and say, just a shred sometimes of logic and continuity would be nice. Just a thought. So yes, Kevin Owens is responsible and in a big part of the loss of the tag team belts from Rollins and Murphy. And I think that's probably the narrative that they'll take rather than the miscommunication. Again, we'll see at Elimination Chamber where this goes. But Kevin Owens delivering the stunner to a pretty big pop from the crowd, the Brooklyn crowd, after Seth sold the stunner pretty damn well. I mean, he's got springs in his legs. It was a great stunner. Kevin Owens hitting it and leaving was great, and having the Street Profits basically retaliate on that and take advantage, capitalize on that, and ended up winning the belts. The crowd seemed to love it. I'm typically not a fan of newer teams winning the belts. It feels like it's not earned as much. When the Viking Raiders won, the crowd initially popped, and then they did nothing with them. I don't think that WWE is going to do the same thing here. I think WWE will maximize them a little bit better, and I hope it's not better in terms of, like, Crime Time better. Remember Crime Time, right? From Brooklyn, yeah, I don't want to, I mean, you talk about racial issues. Whew, it's amazing what WWE has done in really the recent past. But so anyway, I believe the Street Profits have a long run in them. I hope they do. I hope they retain the belts. I think they will at Elimination Chamber, and I think they will through WrestleMania, and it's just the right place for them. And while, like I said, typically newer teams, I'm not a fan of winning the belts. In this case, I think that they are deserving of the belts based on the crowd reaction they've gotten, based on what they've done in NXT. They've kind of grown up in fans' eyes. And Montez Ford is super athletic, and Angelo Dawkins in his own right. Right. I mean, I know I'm kind of I don't want to say forgetting him, but when you have a big star like Montez Ford, sometimes you overlook the credentials of the their counterpart. And Angelo Dawkins, again, in his own right, is a hell of an athlete. And it's nice to have a big man with a little man and to get the hot tag and so forth. So Angelo Dawkins plays his part well, too. And so this Street Profit tag team, I think, has a long ways to go, and that's up. So I'm looking forward to it. So we also got an explanation, or rather a continuation, from AJ Styles this past week about The Undertaker, saying how it seems as if him and Undertaker are on a collision course.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Why? Why does it seem that way, AJ? How are you guys on a collision course? He ran you over. It's not a collision course. Right? You guys are not on a collision course. It's just Undertaker steamrolled you. If we're talking about machinery, right? Are we going to talk about equipment? Seriously, if you want to make that metaphor, he steamrolled you at Super Showdown. So it's going to take a lot more to me than a promo from AJ. And maybe it takes week after week after week after week before Undertaker finally accepts. And maybe he, AJ sneak attacks Undertaker from behind on that final week. I don't know. There's still a lot of follow-up here, a lot of groundwork that they destroyed at Super Showdown with a single chokeslam and Undertaker not even taking off his ring gear to defeat AJ Styles in a single chokeslam, right? I mean, I'm not a fan of how they book that, because if you're going to follow up with, well, that's the beginning of their match, their program to WrestleMania. Well, why? That's a terrible way to start it. A terrible way for having them go one-on-one. You already paid it off at Super Showdown, and now we're supposed to just start from scratch again and forget that Super Showdown happened, and then Undertaker beat him with a single chokeslam, and if they're not taking off his ring gear, like he was some independent circuit guy that they just pulled from the local wrestling academy and stuck in there for a lashing. I mean, it really was that bad. It's not the way you want to start the program, so... But nonetheless, AJ tried, and he also, while he faced Aleister Black this past week, I had a problem with the way Aleister Black was utilized, the guy that for months was beating on talent, beating up lower card talent, finally gets to Eric Rowan, beats Eric Rowan twice, and then he gets fed to the OC, which he defeated Karl Anderson, was about to defeat Luke Gallows, and then AJ comes in and... just basically beat him. I mean, so Aleister Black gets beat down pretty quickly. I wasn't a fan of how they did it, because Aleister Black, I think, has a very bright future and still does. I mean, this, I don't think it did too much damage. It didn't do career ending damage, but it certainly defined him down to a level that, I wasn't ready for. And I was enjoying the ascension rather than the dissension of Aleister Black. So I know that these two are going to have a no disqualification match at Elimination Chamber. I would expect Undertaker to somehow be there involved. His presence will be felt. I just don't know in what capacity, if it's during or after the match. And I would think that AJ probably wins clean here and soundly defeats Aleister Black as he moves on to Undertaker, and they try to build some credibility back to AJ Styles after that really embarrassing really, I think, damaging, I don't even want to call it match, I put that in air quotes, with The Undertaker at Super Showdown. So It's not to say I'm not looking forward to this match, because I am, because I think it's the best option for Mark Calloway at this point, Undertaker. I think it's the best option for him to have a halfway decent match, is to have somebody that is ultra talented, quick, agile, still in his prime, although I'd say in the back end of it, and can hold a match on his own. And that, I believe, is what AJ Styles is at right now. That is where he is at in his career. And so he's the perfect fit, I believe, perfect fit for a Undertaker match at WrestleMania. So, and furthermore, when AJ Styles talked about how in the contract that we signed to have this match, and talks about how, if you notice, we have it in the contract that you had to defeat Carl Anderson, and then you had to defeat Luke Gallows. It made everyone look like fools. It made everyone look like fools, as if Aleister Black doesn't read contracts, as if every match actually has to have a contract. I mean, if that's the case, then half the matches on Raw wouldn't happen, because they tend to at least presented in a presentation way, in its way that WWE is presented in pro wrestling. Matches don't always have contract signings. I mean, matches are made backstage. Matches are oftentimes made on the fly when you're cutting a promo and someone interrupts you. So the fact that contract signings have to happen makes you wonder, well, what about the rest of the matches? They don't have to have a contract, right? So did Aleister actually sign a contract for this match? I'm probably reading way too much into this, but I think you guys catch my drift. Now moving on to a segment or a match that has a lot of people up in arms. A lot of people even messaged me about this podcast, destroying it. And that's the 24/7 championship match between Ricochet and Riddick Moss. And having Riddick Moss win really put people over the edge. Not just that that Ricochet got defined down to a 24/7 championship match, but then he goes on to lose it. And especially when the 24/7 championship has really been defined as a barely a championship, basically a toy that you could go to, you know, your local FYE or Kmart or Walmart. I don't think Kmart's still a thing, is it? At least Kmart's around here went belly up. But go to your local toy store and pick up a belt, and it would mean as much as the 24/7 championship. That's how it's been presented. It's been presented as a joke. And I'm not a fan of that, but that's what's happened. What R-Truth is a 36-time champion or something like that. And by the way, on a side note, if you guys haven't seen the R-Truth 365 or whatever the special that they were advertising, you really need to see it. It takes R-Truth and all of his comedy and great timing and everything else and that he was in WWE and has been and continues to be, and really adds so many dimensions to his personality as a human being. Very well done. So if you haven't seen it, it is well worth your time. I think it's like an hour or so. You gotta see the R-Truth special. It's very inspiring, and it's a story that I think some people can relate to. Most people can, and comes from a really rough place. Ends up in jail, makes his way back. He tells you how he got into wrestling. Actually, cries. I mean, it's a really heartfelt and inspiring story. Very well done on all levels. So check it out. Anyway, Riddick Moss beats R-Truth. Or I'm sorry, beats Ricochet, a guy that was just in the main event of Super Showdown with Brock Lesnar, ends up losing to Riddick Moss for a championship that is not even really a championship. Now, on the level of that, I understand the frustration. I understand the frustration. And I could sit here and bitch and moan about how they've spent all this time building him up, and look what they've done. He was the United States champion and went toe-to-toe to AJ Styles. He gets beat by Brock with no offense and then gets defined into a 24/7 title match with Riddick Moss. Yeah, all of that should piss you off. All of it should. But how did Daniel Bryan become successful? How'd that happen? People naturally gravitated towards him. He looked like the common man. People felt he was being misbooked, misused. Creative was not doing him any favors. And the fans organically got behind him. Since Ricochet's been up here, he has gotten championship opportunities. He's been involved in main events. He has gotten prime time. So I have no problem with this from the perspective of taking the positive outlook of, okay, he has certainly had a fall from grace. And this is a slap in the face to Ricochet. But sometimes breaking somebody down is the best way to build them back up. Super cliche, I know. I'm getting a lot of cliches tonight. But sometimes that's the best formula, is to completely destroy the model of Ricochet and build it back. Now, I'm not saying destroy his moveset, but maybe the fan support for Ricochet will grow that much more. And because when fans feel like a wrestler is not being positioned the way that they feel they should, what do the fans do? They revolt. They start to cheer the guy that they feel is deserving of more in a better placement, which then does just that. Because the fans have learned and been educated, really since Daniel Bryan, that they have the voice, they have the power. At least that's how WWE would frame it that we do. And, you know, sometimes while we have a voice, Vince McMahon's voice shouts louder than all of ours collectively. The fact is that the fans still have a pretty powerful voice in who they want to be in a main event position. So maybe this is the best thing that could happen to Ricochet. Build him, break his ass down to build him back up. And maybe that's not the purpose of this, but this is a unforeseen benefit that could come of this. And I heard people talk about how, well, he must have pissed somebody off. Look what they did at Super Showdown. Zero offense, a squash match, gets put in Riddick Moss's, on the losing side of Riddick Moss, and a 24/7 championship match. But would you really have wanted Ricochet to win the 24/7 belt? I wouldn't. That, I think, would have been more damaging to win the 24/7 championship. You know, what, just running around backstage like a fool, when, you know, as the usual eight suspects chase him in single file? Like a bunch of fools? No. I think having him win here would have done worse, more of a disservice. And yes, it's against Riddick Moss. So, I think that we need to look at the positives of this. We don't want him as 24/7 champion. I think Ricochet could still benefit from a loss here in breaking him down. You know, he's certainly got to work on his promo skills. So, I'm trying to look at the light here, because there's a lot of negative there, but as I just outlined, there is and could be potentially really big positives coming out of this. So, overall, guys, I think it was a decent Raw. I mean, we had Liv Morgan and versus Ruby Riott, right? We had that. Does anybody really? I know Liv Morgan won. It was a quick roll up on Riott. Sarah Logan dropped to the mat, counting 1, 2, 3 quickly. I'm reading just the, as I refresh my memory, I'm reading the final paragraph of the this match. So Liv Morgan wins, and then Ruby Riott gets back to her feet, looking at Sarah Logan. Riott shoves Logan across the ring. Does anybody really even care what Sarah Logan does? I mean, Logan ends up teeing off on Morgan, left Morgan and Riott laid out in the center of the ring, and smiles as she exits the ring. So we're supposed to believe that Sarah Logan has any chance in the world. I don't know. Sarah Logan is, I kind of, with Mary Grader on the show last, or this past weekend, I wasn't a big fan of Sarah Logan. We don't know what Sarah Logan is. Okay. I don't know how to feel about her. All right. One more segment here about the Eric Rowan revealing his spider. Actually, one more. Shayna Baszler, and I'll get to that in a minute. The spider is what's been in the cage, and a mechanical spider at that. They must have spent a lot of time at the toy store this past week, because he had red cups, right? You have toy titles, and you have a mechanical spider. So, we have a backstage segment here with No Way Jose, and basically his I don't know, what do you call him? Adam Rose rejects in a backstage segment as No Way Jose continues to just run around like a fool backstage, and having Eric Rowan be the guy who's finally going to reveal his mysterious creature that's in the cage, and it ends up being a spider. I hope they don't actually try to play it off like it was real, because it was extremely obvious it was mechanical. And so I don't even know what to make of it, but it's a spider. That's the payoff. Okay. So he's a guy that likes to capture ridiculously large spiders. All right. Whatever he wants to do, I guess. There's really no way to present this in a good way. There's no way to present this payoff in a good way. It felt very haphazard thrown together anyway. So I wasn't a fan of it. It was a payoff, and we got one, and we finally got an answer as to what's in the cage. I would anticipate no further follow-up on this, and I don't need it. I really just don't. All right, and then finally we have Kairi Sane with Asuka versus Shayna Baszler. And Shayna Baszler made her entrance, struts her way down to the ring, enters the ring, and skips around. She's throwing a towel down and raising her hands. By the way, what are we supposed to feel about Shayna Baszler? I mean, really, what are we supposed to feel about her? She's a legit badass. And she doesn't really do a whole lot to make you hate her, other than attack Becky Lynch. But in the promo they had against one another, Shayna came across as the much more calm, cool, collected, and level-headed one than did Becky. So, I don't know what to believe. And again, it's against Kairi Sane. Kairi Sane, isn't she heel as well? So it was basically a heel versus heel match. Just bizarre. The match wasn't bad here with Kairi Sane. Obviously, Shayna Baszler won and made Kairi Sane tap, as she should have. After the match, Baszler looked up at the ramp at Becky Lynch. And then Lynch lifts the championship, shouting, "I don't have my on my wrestling boots, but I'll fight you." Baszler grabs Kairi Sane, shaking her back and forth like a rabid dog as she smiles and drops her. I don't know. This is weird. Becky on commentary was entertaining. It was fine. I just don't know what they didn't really do a whole lot for this program this past week. Becky Lynch and Shayna Baszler didn't feel as important this week. It wasn't a focal point by any means. They still got 4 weeks to make it one, and I'm fine with that. It just wasn't one this week because of Brock, because of the tag team title change, because of Orton and Beth Phoenix. So, fine. I mean, there's time to make this up. It just felt very kind of thrown together, steer the course, and let's not make too much progress. That's ultimately what it felt like. This was, again, I thought a okay Raw. I know that many people looked at this Raw as concerning from a booking perspective, and I see why. Some of the holes make no sense. Like, why are the Street Profits getting a championship match, a tag team title match, and why is it their last time? None of that was ever explained, ever. How does that happen? I mean, really, how does that kind of stuff happen? You have Orton saying that he wants to, he loves Edge and he wants to make sure he has a life after this and ends his second run and his comeback short. But you attacked his head and neck, surgically repaired, which would then affect his quality of life. So that was a little backwards. But you had outstanding performances from Orton, from Beth, and Beth deserved the RKO. That's a babyface move there, right? I enjoyed it. So, to me, it didn't put a whole lot of heat on Randy. It put a little bit, but it didn't put the mega heat that would have been, I think, on him had it actually been unprovoked. I went through that at length, at nauseam, I think, earlier in the show. But the show was, it was kind of over, it felt a little bit all over the place. It didn't flow as nicely as past weeks, but you're going to have a stinker every once in a while. You're going to have a blip every once in a while. And this certainly wasn't the worst Raw I've ever seen. by any stretch of the imagination. So this was a show, I think, that served its purpose. I think you're going to take away the for certain, the RKO on Beth. That's first and foremost. And you're going to come across with the Drew McIntyre three Claymore kicks with Brock on his back, and probably the Street Profits winning the Raw Tag Team belts. I mean, I think in that order, too, 1, 2, and 3. That's probably the way that you're going to remember Monday Night Raw. You're not even going to probably think about AJ Styles and Undertaker, because it doesn't even feel interesting at this point. That can change, but it just doesn't feel as interesting or as important because of what happened at Super Showdown. Alrighty, guys. Well, that's what I got from Monday Night Raw. Again, if you want your voice on this show, as you heard in my previous show, and you want your question, your comment, your rant, keep it to a minute to 2 minutes tops. And send it to me via your voicemail. Well, not via your voicemail, but you can create a voice memo. And just send it to me from your phone. Email me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. You know, as you heard in the last show, I got two people that did that. And I answered their question or comment. And it was nice to hear another voice, as many of you like to voice your own opinions. Well, you can literally do that by sending me a voice memo. Or file, if you want to record it on your computer, and email me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Try to keep it brief, if you can. Question, comment, rant, whatever you want. Keep it PG as well. Otherwise, we'll have to do some bleeping. So, guys, thanks so much for joining me. Tomorrow, we'll be back with a Wrestling Nostalgia. Wrestling Nostalgia returns tomorrow. And then, of course, NXT and your new AEW host of Jeff Johnson comes your way on Thursday as well with your AEW review. And then on Saturday, Ashley Mann and I will be doing your Elimination Chamber preview prediction show. So you're not going to want to miss this week. There's a lot of content coming, new co-hosts, new opinions, just so much coming your way, and things are just going to continue to ramp up as WrestleMania season rolls on, ultimately till April 5th when we get to Tampa. And then even after that, there's always the WrestleMania hangover. It's kind of depressing. It's the day after Christmas. There's not anything happening. But then you roll into the next season, and that's SummerSlam season. I mean, things just continue to move in wrestling world. So there's a lot to talk about, and there's going to be a lot more coming up. So thank you guys for listening. Head on over to Patreon if you want an ad-free experience at patreon.com/WWE podcast. $1 will get you this entire library ad-free. You can also head on over to my Twitter feed at the WWE podcast if you want to follow there. And my website at WWEpodcast.com, as things are going to be, more content is going to be added there. I may be looking to add someone on a full-time basis to manage that and add video and so forth. But, as we continue to grow, I want to be able to manage it in a manageable way rather than just growing too much too soon. So there's lots coming up. This 2020 is going to be a huge year for this show, huge year for podcasting, huge year for WWE. So I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much for listening, guys. I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show. Or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.